Welcome back to the Reptiles With Podcast. Today we're hanging out at Atlanta Repticon. But before we get started, make sure to subscribe and share with your reptile-loving friends. This episode was brought to you by Reptiles Express, Premium Crickets, and Repticon Reptile Shows.
Hey, this is Chaz with More Than Morelia. You can find me on Instagram. I am working with Australian pythons and Asiatic rat snakes.
Hell yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's good to be here. Beautiful day.
Yeah. Did you see anything cool at the show?
It's cool to see more cat geckos coming around. Those are really neat.
Okay.
It's cool to see a lot more blue tongues and a lot more really nice captive blue tongues coming around for people to get their hands on.
For sure.
There's a lot of variety at this. A lot of variety at this show.
What is it about the cat geckos that you like?
So my buddy Brendan, BM Exotics, is working a lot with those. And it's been cool to see his passion about it and then be able to see them at shows more. And I'm kind of following that transition into imported cat geckos coming in and then people really starting to work with them, produce them, and have some captive bred stock going around.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I've seen that at the shop. We've been getting a bunch of them, and I guess they're becoming more popular. That's cool. It's something else that we get to look forward to.
And their personalities are great. They're very cryptic, I think would be the word. Very slow-moving, but also curious. Kind of coming out at night. It's really cool to watch them drink water off leaves and get under those leaves and burrow and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah. So, it seems like the talk of the town is Morph Market.
It sounds like that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. How are you feeling with the changes? Does it affect what it is that you do?
I don't know if it necessarily affects what I do right now.
Okay.
I guess one of the most recent examples of the changes of Morph Market is the individual pictures of animals, which I think can be a blessing and a curse for a lot of people. And I think there should be, some leniency with animals that do look very, very familiar.
Yeah.
Like, do we need individual pictures of every Mexican black king snake?
Yeah.
Do we need even something like sulcata tortoises?
Yeah.
Where they do look different as babies, but every one of those will look exactly the same as an adult. It doesn't matter which one you buy. They're all brown.
Yeah, I think that he did release, like, a list of animals that were like, okay, these categories need to have exact photos.
Right.
But I didn't see... My concern specifically was the turtles and the tortoises, because you're talking about, you know, like, let's say striped mud turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, maybe I only have 10 of them, but they all look the same, dude.
Right.
And then they're all going to go in the same pond.
Uh-huh.
So what exactly am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
But realistically, like, somebody did mention in one of the comments that they were like, oh, like, it might not be it would be different if you set the quantity correctly on your ad.
Right.
You know, if you have 10, then it might allow... the representational photo, which I think works specifically with those species. I guess my big kind, not so much a fear, but my question is, like, how would reptile stores deal with that kind of situation? Because me as a breeder, like, it's fine. I individually photograph all my animals. As a matter of fact, most of the changes don't really affect me. You know, but when I'm thinking about the broader industry and I'm thinking about some of these shops that utilize that, is the need for that to take away the shops from the platform?
Right.
You know, those are kind of like questions that I have. I talk to Darian every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't spoken to him specifically about this matter, especially because it's so fresh. You know, it's hot off the presses. Yeah.
And here's the other thing that I was thinking, and I don't remember where I read this, but a fairly popular breeder posted, and they said, "Look, if I produce let's take rhino rat snakes, for example. I produce 20 rhino rat snakes, an animal that is pretty known to be difficult to get feeding, mm-hmm. and they go through these phases where they'll eat a few times, and then they stop. And yeah. they go a period of time where they're not going to eat as little tiny babies, and then they pick back up. Mm-hmm. Well, if I sold two baby rhino rat snakes to a morph market buyer, uh-huh. and those animals stop feeding, if we didn't have individual pictures, well, I could simply take two other rhinos that are going to look literally the same as adults, okay. most likely, and then just send these two rhinos that are eating perfectly off to this customer.
Yeah.
But if they're two originally purchased rhinos stop eating, now I have to message the customer and say, hey, the snakes you purchased are not eating right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now I'm going to send you two others. Yeah. And I feel like that starts to sound a little bit fishy.
Yeah.
When if there was no individual pictures on that animal, if it was a representative photo, you would just get the animals that are feeding best and doing best at that time.
Yeah. Especially if they look so similar.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Talk about a rhino rat snake, it's green.
It is green. And you get color variants based off of like line breeding and based off of lineage.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I was going to purchase an animal that I knew was going to look a very certain way as an adult,
yeah.
I want to purchase the best feeding animals, not the animals that I chose off of some morph market pictures.
I want
the ones you have that are doing the absolute best, not necessarily the two that I chose.
I do like the idea of a rather, I wouldn't purchase, me personally, an mm-hmm. animal that I haven't seen.
Right.
I would like a photo, but I like the idea of having the option, like, for a seller to be like, yeah, this is a representational photo or it's not. And if it is, like, maybe that seller sends you some photos. Like,
right.
And but if they don't want to send you the photos, then it's like, okay, I don't do business with you, and I move on if that's what you're about. If you don't care about that, if you trust the seller enough, then, you know, you just go through their channels and you order the representational photo. But, you know, if it is a representational photo, it kind of also opens a conversation mm-hmm. where now you are back and forth with the seller and you're like, okay, like, what do you have? You get to see some variations and stuff like that. And maybe it, from a seller's point of view, that's better for sales because
right.
now you are in contact with the person versus the people just seeing all the animals you have and they're like, well, I'm not interested in any. And now you don't have a chance to, like, hey, like, this is who I am. Introduce yourself.
Right.
Try to make a connection with the person. But in the end of the day, like, it is what it is. It is Darian's platform now.
Right.
And we just have to, I don't want to say deal with it, but we have to abide by the rules that are set in place. If we're going to be using his platform, and
right.
that's, yeah, you know what? It wasn't what it used to be. But I hope that positive things come out of the changes. In the end of the day, that's really all we can do. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think he does have good intentions.
Yeah.
I really do think his intentions are for the reptile community to come together and be better overall. And I think there's always going to be drama when you have so many people's opinions and ideas and ways of doing things, and people don't like change.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And I think if we all just woke up one day and Darian just made all the changes that he thought were appropriate, I uh-huh. think there would be a lot less drama going around. Because a lot of, even if you go through these Facebook posts, like, a majority of these people that are they don't even have Morph Market accounts.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you complaining about? It's
like,
oh, I might have one in the future, but like eBay doesn't set their rules and regulations based off of if you're going to be a future user or not.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. In the conversations that I've had with him, he really is about having a positive future for the reptile industry, whether that is in a general sense or in his eyes.
Right.
You know, which that can get a little tricky, of course, because it's just like, you know, why do we have to have an industry based on what you want kind of situation?
Right.
But I am for a positive experience through the reptile industry. I am for transparency. I am for a cleaner industry, not so much like, you know, the people from... I don't mean to say the people in the past, like, the way some of my co-hosts on the other podcast would,
right?
But we need to progress. We need to move forward.
Yes,
it's it's about that. We can't stay in the past. If not, then this it'll die like that.
And the reality is if this industry is going to grow and continue, the people that come into the hobby that are buying their first animal need to get a phenomenal animal.
Yeah.
Because when they take that thing home and it dies 2 weeks later, they're probably not going to continue.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion. Yeah. I think they're just going to be like, well, this kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, move on to something else.
Yeah. One of my good friends, Alex from Imperial,
mm-hmm.
was, he always says, is like, the people that go to him looking for an animal, they're not like you and I usually,
right?
You know, where we're surrounded by this all the time. Some people, like, this is new for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to spend their hard earned money with you. They're spending time with you.
Mm-hmm.
Let them have a good experience.
Yeah.
You know, if at the entrance of their, when they're coming into the hobby, they're met with friction, they're met with problems, they're not going to like what it is that we do here. We're not going
right.
to, we need to be, I know this is like a little bit of a buzzword, but we need to be like a little more inclusive to that thought of like new people coming in of all walks of life and accepting of like maybe people with less knowledge, people that are just trying to find their way. And so we can, so they can have a positive experience. I've said in the past that when I got into the Blue Tongues, the community, for lack of a better term, was a little toxic,
mm-hmm.
you know, where everybody was so hung up on like the lineage. And I get it because, you know, when we're talking about an Australian species that people want to keep pure,
right?
I get it. But also, I'm new to this. Like, you guys are arguing with me about shit that I don't really understand.
Right.
I'm going to get frustrated. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the skink market kind of crashed a little bit. You know, but now the people that are still in this thing, they're going to be benefiting from that in the future.
Right. And when somebody like, say you had posted in that Blue Tongue group and you're like asked whatever question, and it honestly just takes one person from that group sending you a private message and being like, hey,
yeah,
this is how this should go. This is how this community operates, whether it's tracking lineage or selling animals at a certain size or breeding animals at a certain size. Like, if somebody comes to you kindly and just says, hey, this is probably how you should think about doing this, you're far more likely to listen to their advice and then do things correctly.
Yeah.
Rather than somebody just screaming at you on Facebook.
Yeah.
It doesn't
yeah.
usually go very far.
Exactly. And then some people will post like maybe like an issue that they have with their animal.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, you know, either calls them an abuser, calls them this, calls them that, screams at them to take him to the vet. Like, yeah, the person should probably take the animal to the vet.
Right.
And I think that they know that. But they want to know from the experts, quote unquote, the professionals, like, hey, like, what exactly am I looking at here? Help
right.
me understand it. You know, I wouldn't say that every exotic vet specializes in a Blue Tongue. So maybe you guys, the people that work with them all the time, you know, like, have a little patience with me. Like, it must take some kind of guts to go to this group with all these people that love this animal, and then maybe your animal's a little sick.
Right.
You know, and they're posting it, and they're like, well, hopefully somebody could help me. And then you're just meeting them right there with friction, yelling at them, bitching and complaining.
Right. Yeah. A really good point that I heard recently, and I think it was the Reptiles and Research podcast.
Yeah.
That recent, like, 4-hour Bearded Dragon episode uh-huh. that they just did, is like a with the Beardy Vet.
Okay.
And they were talking about a lot, like, bearded dragons specifically, like, the husbandry is incorrect.
Okay.
And they bring this animal to the vet to treat something that is husbandry related.
Okay.
So they give this animal medication, whatever it is. So, like, most bearded dragons have worms.
Yeah.
Going off what the Beardy Vet is saying. And so when they take this dragon into the vet, the husbandry is incorrect. So they're trying to treat these worms and hit it with medication to take care of these worms that don't really need to be treated. But the animal goes back in the same enclosure with improper husbandry, and the problem doesn't get fixed.
Yeah.
So I'm not a advocate for vet right away. The husbandry needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
Because if you just take this animal to the vet and treat whatever the vet finds, because that's what's going to happen, they're just going to treat whatever they find, but then your husbandry never gets switched.
Yeah.
And if this new keeper could ask their questions in a Facebook group and get real answers back of what uh-huh. they need to do, like, maybe the vet, maybe you don't even need to see a vet.
Yeah.
All you need to do is address the husbandry issues. Yeah. Like, your basking temp isn't hot enough. Like, there's no need to take your animal to the vet because it's sitting in the corner of the cage or constantly sitting under the heat. Like, we need to give it a hotter heat bulb. We need to give it a hotter basking spot.
Yeah.
We don't need to send it to the vet so they can run a fecal and treat something that 90% of bearded dragons have in captivity.
Yeah. And then on top of that, like, you're thinking about, like, and I'm not going to sit here and shit on doctors and stuff like that, but human doctors, right? Us.
Yes.
They deal with one species.
Yes.
They deal with us. Vets, on the other hand, they are going to be dealing with a plethora of species, stuff that they might not even specialize in.
Right.
And then every species has this and that, that they need this kind of thing, they need that kind of thing, they need this kind of UV, they need this kind of humidity.
Right.
And then on top of that, your house is different, my house is different, different elevations, different this and that. You know, there's a lot more that we got to think about when we're dealing with animal husbandry and any kind of issues. It's not as simple. I don't think it's not as simple as just, oh, I'm just going to go to the vet and expect them to know it all, you know? Sometimes they're just also trying to figure it out, you know? They need to dissect it also.
They're also not going to know what your husbandry parameters are.
Yeah.
Or, like you're saying, what your room temperature is, or like how cold that cage is getting when your AC kicks on.
Yeah.
But when you can ask a group of keepers in a Facebook group, which is supposed to be, I mean, we supposedly all love the same thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
why can't we help each other? Because it would take one person 15 minutes asking what the husbandry parameters are. And it's like, oh, well, instead of going to the vet, all you need to do is, you know, get stronger UV you know, get a hotter basking spot,
raise the humidity, put some moss in there so it could raise it or something.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I feel like there's little things, but we're so quick to tell people to just take it to the vet when, like, honestly, the vet's not going to tell you anything.
The vet's
going to treat the pinworms that your bearded dragon has. But the point of that podcast with the beardy vet, he was in the study that they did, like, all the bearded dragons have parasites and pinworms. And it's like they live these perfect lives because the parameters of their husbandry are correct.
Yeah, it's almost like it's their, I wouldn't say a natural bacteria, but something of the sort. Like, it's just like a part of their process.
Right, right. Yeah. And problems don't arise inside that animal unless those husbandry parameters are way off.
Yeah.
That dragon gets wet and it's cold. Well, then that bacteria and those parasites become active in that animal. It's like,
hell yeah.
We really gotta think of where we're sending new keepers to and the advice that we're giving them. Because at the end of the day, they're gonna take that dragon to the vet, they're gonna hit it with some medication, they're gonna immunosuppress it, and it's gonna go in the same enclosure that's not hot enough for that animal to appropriately bask under, and it's going to continue getting sick.
Yes. All right. Tag yourself one more time. Where can people find you?
This is Chaz with More Than Morelia on Instagram.
All right. I'm Jason with Critters Creatures. Instagram is at Critters Creatures. We work with mainly ball pythons. Today we've brought all blood pythons because all of our ball pythons aren't ready for shows. We've also got boas. We've got Sumatran short-tailed pythons. We've got Kenyan sand boas. Coming up in the future, we'll have your standard boas. And we'll also have Japanese rat snakes and bull snakes.
So you're working with a variety.
A variety.
And now, do you have, like, multiple animals of each, or...?
Yeah. Each animal I listed, we have at least a trio of.
Okay.
If not a quad or more.
Okay. Now, something that you know, when I spoke to you earlier, you had mentioned that, you know, it was a little bit slow on your end. You didn't have ball pythons. Do you, like, notice that when you do have ball pythons, it's more active around your table?
That is difficult to answer. We do a lot of calling out to people as they pass. So, you know, anyone who walks past our booth, they get a, hey, how you doing today? How's it going? You know, just to get that response from people. Because there's so much going on at these shows.
Yeah.
Ball pythons do tend to get more people to look at what you have because they're, at least in Georgia, they're the standard snake that people are looking for.
Okay. Now, I do think it's great that you brought your blood pythons. It's growing
in
popularity.
Sounds like there's a butt coming in that.
No, there's no butt. There's no butt. I do like them. I was going to say that they're really growing in popularity.
Yeah.
I think it was it a blue-eyed Lucy that was just made?
Someone was talking to me about that earlier. That might have been you.
Okay.
But actually, no. Sorry, I'm face blind, so no, I have a really hard time remembering who I talk to about things.
Yeah, you're good.
Someone was talking to me about Juggernaut Reptiles producing a Blue-Eyed Lucy.
Yep.
And we got to talking about the Pied Bloods and how I wish I could afford one without a loan.
Yeah. What's the price tag on one of those right now?
I haven't checked in a while because it scares me.
That's funny. I feel that way about many ball pythons.
Yeah.
So, what with the blood python morphs are you working with?
Mostly Matrix right now.
Okay.
For a while, our primary breeding pair was an ivory and a normal.
Okay.
The normal girl is a redhead, which, you know, a lot of blood pythons have that dark black head.
Yep.
She's the opposite. She's got a red head. So she produces amazing-looking matrixes.
Okay.
So we've had a couple clutches out of her. Historically, they've flown off the rack.
Okay.
Like, we could not keep them. We have one hold back from her, which is an amazing looking matrix.
Okay.
But we also have Batik or Batik, however you want to pronounce it.
Yeah, I always get confused, and every time I try to pronounce it, somebody always tries to correct me, so I'm like, I just don't even say it anymore.
It's one of those words that everyone reads and forms their own opinion on.
Yeah.
So we bought a Gravid Batrix, okay, which are some of the snakes you saw on our table,
yep,
today. So we're splitting the profits from that with the person who sold it. So that's pretty much it for blood python morphs. We've got Het T-Neg in there.
Okay.
So eventually we're going to get something T-Neg to put in there.
Okay.
To prove, not prove that out, because we know the dad of the snakes that we have is T-Neg, because he was visual.
Yeah. Cool.
So yeah, blood pythons, it's one of our smaller projects. We've got a trio.
Yeah.
But, you know, I absolutely love working with them.
Yeah, something that I really wanted to work with was the Sumatran short tails. Somebody has them on their table, and they are just so dark. I love them.
That would be
so
Frank Monroe.
Yeah.
F Bird something on Instagram.
Yeah.
Frank is someone I've known for years. I see him at shows. We always catch up.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got the blackhead Sumatran short tail pythons. I've got the pumpkinhead Sumatran short tails.
What do you mean, pumpkinhead? Can you
pumpkinheads? They look like a normal Borneo.
Okay.
In coloration. So they've got that orange head, and they've got
okay.
the kind of brownish white and black pattern going down them.
Understood. Okay.
But we produced a clutch of those earlier this year.
Nice.
And we have one left that hasn't sold. And the only reason we didn't bring it today is because we filled up our display with bloods.
Wow. That's cool. And then with ball pythons, what are you working with?
We've got a lot of ball pythons. We just bought a new rack to fit all of our females.
Okay.
I have a lot of Dinker projects coming up. I worked for an importer for a couple years, specifically so that every April I could get first shot at, you know, new stuff coming in from Africa.
Got you.
So we've got about 30 different Dinker projects going on.
Yeah.
But they seem to grow slow. All the females that we got are very slow growing.
You know what I noticed about some of these, not the ones that are, not the babies that are wild caught, the hatchlings from over there that come in. They are small.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about. We had gotten some in at my job, and I'm like, dude, they are tiny. And this is a direct import. The guy that's behind you is the one that does it for us. And I thought it was insane, because, I mean, obviously I'm used to seeing captive-bred ball pythons, and they're a lot bigger.
Well, usually when you see captive-bred ball pythons, you know, they've had a couple meals. They've had a chance to get a little bit of size on them.
Yeah.
These imports, they're, you know, once they're out of the egg, they're in a bag and on their way to America.
But even then, as fresh hatchlings, I think that they are smaller than our captive bred hatchlings. I could be super wrong. Maybe the ones that we got were just small.
It may be the ones that you got. I worked for Sun Pet.
Okay.
Before their reptile department shut down.
Okay.
And we would get thousands of ball pythons every year. So I saw tiny ones, but I also saw ones that are bigger than any hatchling I've ever seen.
And those
may have been ones that have been sitting around for a while.
Okay.
But they would all shed, like, right after we get them. So I know that they were pretty fresh.
Cool beans. Well, I'm excited for your future short tail projects. I think that is something that's going to become more and more popular.
I think it is, too.
Yeah, I think the more we breed those animals, the more tame they'll become over time.
Yep.
I think that a lot of people have that negative stigma with short-tailed pythons because of their quote-unquote attitude.
Yeah, well, and you can already see that tameness being bred into them because originally they came over as part of the skin trade.
Uh-huh.
So they were these big, angry snakes that were being imported.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just got a horrible reputation because of that. Yeah. They're still a little more snippy than your ball python, but, you know, my first clutch of blood pythons, they were hand tame out of the egg.
Yeah.
You could pick them up, toss them around. They did not care.
Yeah. And something that I will say about them is that people that I've seen handle short-tailed pythons handle them incorrectly. They handle them like they would either a ball python, a carpet python, something that's going to be a little bit more used to holding on to something.
Right. A snake that's not a strictly ground snake.
Exactly. Where they will they need to plop on something. If they don't feel that their weight is supported, then they start flailing.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And it's the same with their enclosures. Another thing that happens with bloods is if they're kept too warm, and this goes for short tails too.
Uh-huh.
If you throw them in a rack with ball pythons where you've got a 90-degree hot spot, they're not happy. They're going to be an angry snake.
Yeah, yeah. Hell yeah. So what would you say optimal temperature and humidity for them is?
I keep them really humid because they tend to be from swampy areas. And I keep their hot spot at about 85 degrees.
Okay.
That's the hottest I let them get.
All right. And they're doing well for you year-round?
Yep.
They're breeding and stuff like that?
Yep.
Cool beans, man. Well, one more time, let people know where they can find you.
All right, Jason from Critters Creatures. The best place to find me is at CrittersCreatures.com. That's got links out to everything else.
There's nothing better than the smell of coffee in the morning, okay? There's also nothing better than the smell of reptiles in the morning. Psych. Reptiles with coffee. That's the smell you want. The strongest coffee, all right? We have it for you. Head on over to the description or go to coldbloodedcaffeine.com and use the code reptileswith to get your Reptiles With coffee today. If you want to support us, head on over to modernreptileshop.com or in the description where you can find our merch. And the best part is that 1% of the proceeds from the merch gets donated to conservation. One more time, that's modernreptileshop.com or head on over to the description.
All right, so this is Ian Miller with Carolina Royal Dragons.
Hell yeah. All right, so you're working with bearded dragons, correct?
Bearded dragons, monitors, crocodilians.
Crocodilians? What are you working with crocodilians?
Alligators, morlets, crocs, smooth front caimans, Cuvier's dwarf caimans. We're trying to get some spectacle caimans in.
Okay.
Hopefully in the near future, some Cuban crocs and Nile crocs.
And what got you into working with the crocodilians?
I've always liked them.
Yeah.
And then as my experience grew working with the monitors, I was like, let's take the step into some crocodilians.
Yeah, it was so like the natural step.
Yeah, so then I got some alligators, and I was like, all right, sweet. I can get some crocodiles. Some crocodiles, and I was like, okay, cool.
Okay, cool. Now, as far, I mean, your table is primarily, you have a couple monitors, correct?
Yeah, we've got a few monitors. We've got one retic. The rest of the retics are back at the facility. Mainly bearded dragons and a few monitors.
All right, and when you do these shows, you mainly bring bearded dragons pretty much?
Yeah, we try and bring 2 to 3 tables of bearded dragons, and then the rest have monitors, boas, retics.
Gotcha. Hell yeah. So I you had some of the pied bearded dragons, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Is that something that you're working with?
Yeah, we're working with pieds. Probably the biggest... We try and cover a broad spectrum of bearded dragons. Probably the biggest thing we work with is reds, like red tigers.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest thing.
Okay. Is there anything with the bearded dragons, like, specific? Is that one of those things? Because I know that, like, some people, like, will breed bearded dragons because that kind of, like, supplements for their actual passion projects. Is that one of the things for you, or is that, or, like, bearded dragons, like, an actual, like, mainstay for you?
It's kind of both. Like,
okay.
Because we produce about 4,000 dragons a year.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. How many dragons do you have?
We got about 120 adults.
Okay, and you're breeding them, like, outdoors? You're breeding them?
We've got a breeding facility in Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay.
And we've got them cycled to where we've got different groups that are breeding throughout the entire year.
Oh,
so, like,
shit.
We've got, like, group one that'll be breeding the first part of the year, then we've got another group that's breeding during the summer, then one that's breeding during the winter. So we try and have babies all year round.
And, like, the way that you're doing that is that you're, like, kind of, like, stimulating their, like, brumation cycle? Is that kind of what's going on? All right. Do you have... Are there, like, any issues with that? Like, when you're dealing with, like, barometric pressure and just, like, natural weather changes? Or do you find that the dragons kind of, like, fall into place with whatever you are, like, quote-unquote, scientifically trying to manipulate?
I'm trying to figure out how to describe it, because I've been doing it so long now, it's kind of just, like, second nature. So, like, to me, it's just, like, I do it, and then it happens.
Yeah.
It took some manipulating, like, when I first started doing it, like, dropping different areas of the building to different temperatures and stuff.
Ooh.
And so, like, those enclosures would drop down, so they would naturally go into brumation, while the other side of the building, it would still be in the high 70s, low 80s, while this side's in the mid to upper 60s.
Okay.
So it all fluctuates.
Yeah. And as far as your facility, is it one, like, facility where you deal with the majority of your animals, or do you have, like, different buildings that do, you know, that function differently?
So we've got, like, we've just got one big building, and then it's got everything in it. And then, so, like, but there's different parts to the building to we keep different species to it. So that's probably, that's probably the biggest thing that helps. So, like, one end of the building, we've got one AC unit that's, like, double the power of the one on this end. So, like, the stuff that needs more airflow, more ventilation, more just, like, basically stuff that's got more higher wattage heat bulbs.
Yeah.
It's able to cool the outside of the building. Not the outside of the building, but, like, the outside of the enclosures better. So that way the inside of the enclosures aren't spiking up super high.
Okay. Now, why aren't you breeding blue tongue skinks?
I thought about it.
You need to, because I'm going to tell you something right now. Look, bearded dragons, they're cool. But blue tongue skinks, they are the superior pet lizard.
You think so?
100%, dude. They do stuff.
That's true.
Bearded, mind you, most people like the bearded dragon. They hang out, they do the thing. I'm not trying to completely shit on you, but bro, come on. Blue tongue skinks, they're going to explore. I think that they're much more personable. I think that they're hardier. And, I mean, if you got... As far as, like, your brumation cycles down-packed with your bearded dragons, I don't see why you couldn't try some blue tongues. I mean, specifically the Australian ones. So I recommend it, my friend. Do it.
I might have to give it a try, get a few groups going.
Yeah, man, for sure. Now, anything that you want to work with, other than the crocodilians that we covered, anything you want to work with in the future?
We're about to be starting a venomous section.
Oh, okay. So,
I probably shouldn't say it on here.
Yeah, you don't have to.
It's kind of a secret.
Okay.
That we're kind of, like, keeping on the down low right now.
All right.
Until everything is kind of, like, set in stone.
Okay.
I'll tell you after.
All right, cool. Well, where can people find you so that way, you know, they can see the secret when it comes out?
Instagram and Facebook at Carolina Royal Dragons.
So we're sitting here with the man, the myth, the legend, Steve's Morphs. I wanted to talk to you about Desert Ghost. All right.
Desert Ghost.
So,
you're talking about the new
ABCD,
whatever.
Every single letter, yeah.
Okay. Desert Ghost has been read by the Bells for over 20 years.
Yeah.
It's always been a simple recessive. Everybody's always bred it a certain way.
Yep.
You breed a visual to a head to a head, a visual to visual, and you get the same results.
Yeah.
I'm not changing any of my breeding plans.
Okay.
I'm not going to do anything differently.
Okay.
I always use a visual on one side and a head on the other if I do that, or a bit double visual.
Uh-huh.
I very rarely do head-to-head pairings.
Okay.
But the way it came out, it seemed like it was a little premature. They didn't have all the information, like you need A, B, and C, but we don't know what C is just yet. So, but the more people I talk to, and even Justin came out with a video the other day, and he talked about it. And if you bred the way you've been breeding it for so many years, you're going to get the same results. Nothing is really going to change with your results, whether you breed it from a het to a visual, a visual to visual. I mean, I can't even think of – this probably on one hand how many people actually bred visual to visual that got a normal.
That's what I was going to say. Like – How often is that happening? That
there's
that
no statistics and there's no numbers on it, so there's really no way of telling. I've never bred a visual to a visual and got normals.
Okay.
Me personally.
Uh-huh.
I just had somebody just message me and email me that bought Desert Ghost for me over 2 years ago, and they want to know if I had everything tested for A, B, C, or whatever it is. I said, I'm not going through that. I'm not going to test everything, and even if I did, it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago you bought these snakes.
The science was different back then. Yeah.
I don't even know if I got those animals anymore. Yeah. I might have sold them off. But I'm not changing any of my breeding strategy and the way I've been doing it. And everything works out the same way. And just even said, you're going to get the same results that you had in the last year's past. So to change everything, get everything retested, yes, you can probably get better results with it being more complex of a recessive.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I don't think it's worth really going crazy and changing everything around.
Yeah. I did a head-to-head pairing. It was a pastel clown head Desert Ghost to an Enchi head Desert Ghost, and I produced Desert Ghost. I mean, that was before all this stuff was coming out.
Right.
You know, but now this year when I was doing, I mean, I did the same pairing, so I'm fine with that. But now I did a Leopard Pie double head Exantic Desert Ghost to another Enchi head Desert Ghost. And now I'm thinking to myself, like, damn, what if nothing comes out visual? You know, so it's definitely beginning to be a little worried.
Yeah. At that point, yes, probably if you're going to be making possets.
Yeah.
Those are worth testing.
Yeah, definitely.
I would go that route. But for something that was produced by a visual, I don't think I would worry too much about it being that. Because it's still going to work the same way.
Yeah.
I have heads that I made years ago, bred them, got Desert Ghosts out of them. So I don't think it's enough to worry about right now.
Yeah.
You could increase your chances. Everything might get better. You might get more visuals out if you do it their way and you find out with the A, B, and the C and all that stuff. Yeah, you probably could get better odds. And I do believe it's a more complex recessive. It's not as simple anymore.
Yeah.
But it still works as a simple.
Yeah, but now, so my thing is that if we're talking about A, B, C, whatever, like, what is the letter combination that will make the visual? And does that visual carry all these letters? How does that go? You know, that's the thing that's been confusing.
It gets very complicated, and I don't know if they even know what C is just yet.
Yeah.
They know A and B, but you need C. You need A, B, and C to produce a visual.
Yep.
But when they were saying you can take a like a het or a visual and breed it to something that's not even het and make visuals, I find that hard. You might make some really nice-looking snakes, but I don't think they're visual.
Yeah.
But if that's the way the recessive works, then that might be it.
Yeah.
It might work that way. I've just never had to deal with that. We've never had to deal with that in ball pythons.
Yeah, and it's made me think, like, what else, as far as mutation-wise, that we're working with that works similar, you know?
I mean, there's nothing that they found just yet.
Yeah.
I understand that they were trying to do the Desert Ghost genetic testing for the longest time, and they kept having problems. There was multiple people having problems with it, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't cut and dry. And that's when they figured out it was a more complex. But it still breeds as a simple.
Yeah.
You're still going to get the same results.
Yeah.
So I would just continue doing what you were doing. If you want to get more complex with it and you want to get all your stuff tested and then figure out which ones are A, B, C, this and all that, and get better odds, that's great. But I have probably 80 females that are either visual or het for Desert Ghost. That's a lot of money to shell out to find out if they're A, B, or C.
Yeah, which I
know I can breed them now and still get the same results.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, and then, like, there were also people that were excited because they were like, oh, my God, the prize is going to drop. Now is my chance to get into the project. But I don't think it's going to change much.
I heard that, too, and I also heard people that they're not going to invest in Desert Ghost anymore because that Desert Ghost is still an outstanding team to work with. It makes everything better. Why would you not want to work with it?
You're almost shooting yourself in the foot at that point.
Right,
you know, you're leaving yourself behind.
Yeah, I mean, what would they rather do?
Exactly.
Spiders and bananas? I mean, you know, come on. It's, you know, you want to invest in a bunch of pastels? What do you want to do?
You
really need to work on getting more complex with what you're doing anyway.
Yep.
You don't want to just do Desert Ghost anymore.
Yeah.
The market has changed so much where just making Desert Ghost is not enough. It's got to be het for something else, too. Or a double visual. Or a triple.
Yeah.
You know, everything is moving. Doubles, triples, quads. And it's moving at the speed of light. Now, with genetic testing, it makes it even faster to know. Because you're not making possets anymore.
Yeah.
Unless it's DG or something.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Have you used the genetic testing at all?
I have not. I have quite a few. I made some double recessives, and they were het for posset for some other stuff.
Okay.
That I really need to get tested. Every time I say I'm going to do it, and I'm going to watch for the sheds, we clean and I throw the sheds out and I forget all about it. So I need to mark on the tubs which ones I really need to get tested, because some of them are real important for my triple recessive projects.
Of course.
So like last year, I did a lot of triple het to triple het. And I did make a triple visual. I made an Ultramel Hypo Pied, which is gorgeous, but
fucking
it was a female.
Awesome.
And then I made, you know, males that were double recessive, but they didn't have the third. So it's now it's posset. So now I really have to get that tested just to find out. They're not to size yet, but I should probably figure it out now while they're small.
And not waste
my time anymore if it's not. And then focus on buying something else that will.
Yeah.
I'm doing some of those pairings again this year. I have some triple heads that I'm working in that I already got eggs for that are, it's both sides is the same. It's chocolate, VPI Exantic, Orange Ghost, Desert Ghost.
Yeah.
So it could be a True Ghost, Desert Ghost. And they're both chocolate. So I have a chance of making super chocolate triple recessive, which is
insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be genetic testing in that future.
For
I can
sure.
see that. Just to keep that one going and have better odds. Especially if I hit a visual or a double visual, I don't expect to hit a triple. But if I can make a double male and get it tested for the third to breed it back, that would be worth it.
How many adult females are you working with right now?
I have cut back. I've cut back a lot.
Okay.
I had a lot of stuff in my collection that I probably was not going to use anymore. They were good for the last couple of years. A lot of incomplete dominant stuff that I had in the collection that I was kind of like, you know, I can use this to make hets.
Well, for the
last couple of years, I made all the hets that I want to make on them. So those are kind of now obsolete. I can continue making hets with them, but it's just taking up space. And I'd rather use that space for something else. I have a big sale that's going on this week. I actually have to drive to Oklahoma. I'm transporting 60 adults.
Yeah, your wife was telling me.
One person bought 60 adults for me, all recessive.
Nice.
Just stuff I wanted to move out so I can move better stuff in.
Yep.
And that was a big, huge... You know, 60 adults is huge to move out of your collection. And that means I can move 60 more females in there. But I am starting to reduce it down. I've never done, you know, over 200 clutches.
Okay.
So there's really no point for me to keep almost 500 females.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that many clutches. Yeah. It's way too much work. And it's just me and my daughter, and my wife helps out some. So to get that many females to breed...
Yeah.
Or say I'm going to breed, I want to breed 250 females. I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to hit 100 plus clutches.
Yeah.
You know, it's a numbers game. It's odds. But I don't think I really want to go over in the next, right now I want to stay about 100, 125 clutches.
Okay.
This year I'll probably end up right at 100. Next year I can change my mind. I could say I want to do 150, but I want to get down to about 250 females.
Okay.
Total adult breeders.
Okay.
Females. And then... probably 80 to 100 males, so just different ones that are growing up and ones that are ready to go. But I do want to reduce it down more, because keeping all the incomplete dominant lower end stuff, it takes up a lot of space.
Yes.
And I'd rather have two or three snakes that have all those genes in it in a double recessive or something, you know, just
even the heads and stuff like that.
I mean, even with doing 100 clutches, even if I don't hit all the odds, I'm still, all the byproduct is still going to be the other stuff that I make just for shows, for some lower end stuff, for doing like Repticons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's tons of animals that are being made. Not everything is going to be, you know, the highest that I can make.
There is
always, you know, you get bummed on a clutch. I had a clutch a week ago. It was a pied posshead Ultramel female. So I bred an Ultramel pied to it. Well, I got six eggs, and six eggs hatched, they're all pied, and I got no Ultramels. So right there, that one was eliminated. So now I made a bunch of pieds.
Yeah.
I'll sell them as pieds or pied head Ultramels.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have six of them, it's a lot on the table.
Yeah.
But that's byproduct.
Yeah.
That's not high end stuff that I really want to focus on. And I think every one of them were males.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So.
Now, because you're producing so many clutches, and, I mean, obviously you're doing a lot of shows, do you do any wholesale or anything like that? Or because of the shows, you're able to supplement a lot
actually,
of that?
We did a lot more wholesale prior, I'd say probably last year, we did a lot more wholesale.
Okay.
This year, it's kind of slowed down. There's not as many people buying as much wholesale.
Okay.
And they're very particular. And, you know, I have people contacting me now, and they want normals and single genes, and I'm like, I barely had that last year.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to have that right now. You know, there's not much stuff that's not going to be that low end.
Yeah.
There might be some stuff on my table that you'll see that, it'll say blah, 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 incomplete dominance. But I might not list what the rest are, but they might be a double or a triple recessive I'm just trying to move out, and I'm selling it for face value.
Yeah.
It does happen. And if you ask me, I'll tell you if it's hit for something or a possible hit for something else.
Yeah.
But wholesale is kind of not as much as it used to be.
Okay.
Animals aren't moving as quick as they were a year ago.
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago. So now you're at that point where trying to find someone to pick up all those animals is going to be a little bit more difficult.
Okay.
2 years ago, a year ago, you could have sold 100 lots of all kinds of stuff. It's just not happening anymore.
Gotcha.
I had Joe Fossey come out, I think, last year, and he picked up 75 snakes at one time.
Wow.
Yeah. Stuff I had to move, stuff I needed to make room for, but I had so many clutches coming, I only have so much room.
Yeah.
You know, my wife looked at me at one point, and she knew what was coming and what was hatching, and she goes, okay, you need to move 250 snakes in the next 3 months. You're out of room. You can't do it.
How many shows are you doing a month? You doing a show about every weekend?
No, we'll do all the Tampa Repticons. We'll do the Orlando Repticons, the occasional Lakeland, and then we do two Arlingtons, two Chicago, and I do three or four Atlantis.
Okay.
And that's pretty much, and Daytona.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the gist of it. I'm not doing as many Repticons as I used to do. I'm just sticking to certain ones that I really like doing.
Okay.
I really enjoy the Atlanta show.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of friends that come out here that I get to hang with even after the show's over. We get to hang and do stuff. Molly and Jason are helping me right now this weekend. And then when I go to Oklahoma on my way back, we're actually making a vacation out of it. So we're actually going to stop in Nashville and a couple other places. And we're going to North Carolina. Saturday we'll be there. We'll stay Saturday to Wednesday.
Yeah.
And Molly and Jason are coming out. And then Jeremy and Jeannie Bott are coming out from Bott Exotics. They're going to spend a few days with us, too. So it's going to be a cool little breeder trip, kind of hanging out.
That's cool, man.
We did a breeder cruise about a month and a half ago. There was like 10 of us that went. It was really cool.
Yeah.
I feel like
I've kind of like, not on purpose, but I don't have a lot of ball python specific friends, so I really do want to start going out to a couple more of these shows out of state.
Oh yeah,
you know, just to meet different people. A lot of my general reptile friends are come around from like either pet stores and stuff like that.
Right.
So I definitely want to reach out, you know, to more breeders, expand the collection. I mean, eventually one day I got to do this full time, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to figure out the way to go about that.
I kicked it around for the longest time, and my numbers were there. I was producing enough. I was selling enough to go full-time.
Yeah.
I've been a firefighter for, 20-plus years, and the injuries just kept making me worse and worse.
Yeah.
And then I decided last year that I was going to retire from the fire department. I was just going to leave because injuries were to the point where I couldn't do my job anymore.
Yeah.
And then, 4 months later, I fall off a ladder and break both my arms, my nose, and my two front teeth. And that's still a slow recovery.
Yeah.
I'm still not 100% from that. But once you can get your numbers up to where they are, where you're comfortable with, husbandry's got to be there. Feeding has got to be there. Everything is good. When you got it all down pat and you're working that full-time job, you got to say at one point, could I possibly do this full-time?
Yeah.
I would build up a little bit of savings prior.
Yeah.
Just in case, it doesn't work out. I'm not making the money I thought I was going to make, or things are not selling like I thought they were going to sell. So just have something to fall back on. We've had a pretty good, last so many years where I save a lot. I save a lot of money, and I try to pay off everything I own, and I don't want any outstanding bills.
Yeah.
I don't want to owe anybody anything. I don't want a car payment. I don't want none of that. So that's mainly what I kind of gear towards being full-time, because when you don't really have that many expenses, it's not as hard. You don't have to earn as much.
You can
go a week without selling anything, or not that happens. We're consistently selling, I'd say, 2 to 4 snakes a week.
Okay.
And nothing ridiculous. Nothing extravagant. I mean, you do get those sales. You sell a $2,000 snake or a $4,000 snake, and that's great when you can get that. But even if I sold say, four $300 snakes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still not a bad week.
Yeah.
And if you think about a 40-hour job, I mean, I was a firefighter for a long time, and I knew what my base salary was, and I knew what I took home.
Yeah.
So,
that was a good, like, indicator for you kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. But I would definitely concentrate on just getting as much debt as you can prior to going full-time, because you don't want to come into it going, well, I have to sell this much stuff, or I can't pay the electric bill. And if you got car payments and mortgages and all that other stuff, you know, that stuff's got to get paid. You can't skip over that stuff. That's got to get done. And then, you know, I hate to see you have to say, well, I had to put gas in my car this week, and I had to, you know, pay my car insurance, so my snakes didn't get fed.
Yeah.
That's not good. I mean, you got to keep that going constantly. Your snakes always have to get fed. And I'll tell you, I hated it for the longest time. I bred rodents, and then I got away from it. But I actually went back to it a few years ago, and I'm glad I did. I still hate breeding rodents. There's nothing fun about it.
Yeah.
It's dirty. It's stinky. It's, you know, I'm in Florida. It's extremely hot.
Yeah.
Cleaning days are not fun. But to be where I'm at my level, it made sense to breed my own rodents.
Yeah,
I can spend $1,000 a month on food.
And it's consistent.
It's consistent, and if I need a pup or I need this and I want to feed something twice a week, I don't have to drive to somebody's house to go pick up rodents to go and feed a snake a second time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just walk out the back door, go to the shed, pick it up, and bring them back in. I fill up a bucket and I feed.
Yeah.
That's huge to be able to do that. And the problem was, when I was not breeding rodents, I had Chad Snellgrove from Metamores.
Uh-huh.
He was breeding all my rodents. So I had to drive to Plant City from Brooksville, which is almost an hour drive. So I'm not doing that twice in 1 week.
It's
once a week. I'm getting everything I can and then going home and feeding.
Of course.
But to have your own supply, it's cheaper. I mean, you can spend over $1,000 a week on buying rodents.
Yeah.
Or you can spend $1,000 a month on rodent food and your time.
Yep.
I mean, in between rodent food and bedding, I'm under $1,500 a month.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Which I was spending a week.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been dabbling that for the future. I have horrible allergies, horrible asthma. So that's where I'm like, dude, like, I would have to not only feed and, you know, the rodents, but I would have to pay for somebody to breed the rodents for me.
Right.
You know, so then I start thinking, I'm like, would that even make sense at the end of the day?
Well, I have my daughter that works for me full time.
Yeah.
So she helps assist with all that stuff. And my son's home on summer break from school. So he helps me out. And I pay him. I don't care.
Of course,
I mean, I will pay my son the same thing I pay my daughter just for getting out there. And I'll tell you, he busts his ass. And he works really hard for me. And he doesn't really ask for anything. So I just pay him.
Yeah.
And he's grateful for that. At the end of the day, when we're all done, we shower and everything, I say, how many hours you work? And he says, oh, as many hours. I said, okay, here's cash. And he's like, okay.
There you go. Yeah, one of the most important lessons that my dad taught me growing up was the value of money and the value of your hard work. One of the first, I was in fifth grade. My dad told me, hey, if you were able to get together $50, I'll double it. You know, so I did my hustling thing. I sold some Pokemon cards.
Mm-hmm.
I saved a little bit of lunch money, went to go buy more, sold and traded and did my thing to get $50. And on my birthday, he gave me another $50. It was my first $100.
Yeah.
And then what he told me, he's like, all right, now be careful what you do with this because you might lose it tomorrow if you don't do it properly.
And then think of how long it took you to accumulate to that $100.
Exactly. And
to
then
lose
I just
it that fast.
Rinse and repeat, and you really learn the value of money, you know?
Yeah, my dad was a very hard worker. He worked construction in New York City on skyscrapers. He worked on, like, the first 30 floors of the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
I mean, he busted his ass. I mean, quit school at sixth grade. In Italy, and, you know, got a job. That's what you did. And he's busted his ass his entire life.
Oh, yeah.
But he taught that on me also. You know, nobody's going to hand you anything.
Yep.
If you want it, you got to go out and get it. If you want something bad enough, work for it.
Yep.
Just, you know, and don't just spend money foolishly.
Of course.
You know what I mean? I still live like a poor person at the time. Because, you know, everything is good right now, and everything's paid, and everything's fine, and the market's okay. It's not the greatest it's ever been, but we go through this dip every so many years.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody's been in it 8-10 years, they're going to know what we're going through.
Uh-huh.
I've seen it probably 2, maybe 3 times already.
Yeah.
Since probably 2010. I mean, it hits a rough spot, but things will still move. You will still sell some snakes.
Yes,
yes, you're going to get less than you did last year, but it's kind of a reset.
Yeah.
Prices were elevated for a long time. They didn't. Some of them probably were higher than they should have ever been.
Yeah.
But now it's coming back to realistic pricing, and people are starting to get in more again. But this business is constantly growing. There's always somebody new getting in.
Yep.
One person goes to a reptile show, and they go home, and they go on the internet, and they go down that rabbit hole, and within minutes, that's what they want to
do.
They're going to be breeders. They're going to run, and they're going to buy all this stuff. For those people, take your time. Really do that research.
Yeah.
Ask as many questions as you can. Reach out to bigger breeders. I mean, most of them will talk to you.
Yeah.
You don't have to join a Patreon for someone to talk to you.
Yeah.
That's good customer service. I like that about that. I like that old school part of the business where you were able to text somebody or message somebody or ask questions at a show and not have to pay to get that. I mean, I understand there's that other benefits of Patreons. I'm just not a huge fan of them.
I get you. Well, Steve, you're an inspiration. I love every time that I get to sit down and talk to you.
It's always awesome to talk with you, man.
Yeah. It gets me excited. If I ever have any like doubts about my future with what it is that I'm trying to do, I think back to these conversations and I'm like, no, I can keep doing this.
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
You just drive real hard, man.
Hell yeah. Thanks so much for tuning in. Leave a comment down below and let us know what your favorite part of this episode was. And one more time, this episode was brought to you by Repticon Reptile Shows, Premium Crickets, and Reptiles Express. We'll see you on the next one.